Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Esther, good morning.
Good morning to you, Eric. I'm so excited to be speaking with you again. It's always so fun.
Yeah, me too. And I know that you have a special guest. Patrice Horvath is in studio with you, and you're letting me do the bio today.
I am letting you do. I let you talk sometimes.
It's every once in a while, and I like that. I do appreciate that. But I am so excited to reintroduce Patrice Horvath because I believe she was on a previous podcast, right? Number 19?
She was on podcast number 19, and that was over 2 years ago now. So, So much has happened, and I'm really looking forward to Patrice updating us. There's so much share today.
It's a completely different world. But for you, audience, let me update you on Patrice. So Patrice Horvath is a native and lifelong resident of Los Altos, Mountain View area. Patrice's knowledge of and insight into the area's towns, neighborhoods, schools, and local history are unparalleled. She has over 20 years experience in high-tech corporate sales in Silicon Valley, followed by a 16-year career as a top-producing realtor. In 2019, Patrice Horvath founded Illuminate Properties to give her clients a more personalized level of care. Also, partnering with the powerful real estate technology firm Side, she can offer state-of-the-art marketing, technology, administrative, and legal services while keeping her focus directly on meeting her clients' needs. Esther, this is, you know, so that 2019 update's kind of new from the last podcast, I'm sure. At least it's now it's been a couple of years, right?
Yes, it has. I'm really excited for Patrice to share more with us about this partnership with Side. It's similar with a different firm that I've done here, and it's not a partnership in the same way, but it's so important for those of us who want to give that direct client service that we find effective ways to delegate some of the other important and critical aspects to our firm. And Patrice, can you tell us a bit more about Side and how that does? It's unusual, isn't it, in the real estate industry to have this kind of setup like you have with your practice?
It is. First, I want to say thank you, Esther, for having me back.
Good to see you.
Doing it the first time, and so I'm very excited to be here again. And hi, Eric. It's good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
So yeah, 2 years ago when I was here, I was with a big box brokerage. And one of the things that was missing for me was a lot of time to have a very personal, direct connection with my clients and work with them, hold their hands through the process. It's such a stressful process. And I was presented with an opportunity to start my own company and partner with Side. So I started Illuminate Properties, and we're a boutique brokerage, community focused, and founded on the core principles really of empathy, trust, compassion, integrity, and loyalty. And Side, it's a venture-backed company. They just got an influx of cash, venture-backed cash, and are now valued at, the valuation is $1 billion.
And that's billion with a B.
Billion with a B.
Wow.
And I think of it like this. A brokerage, real estate brokerage, is typically the brand. Coldwell Banker, Remax, etc. They're the brand. Side is not the brand. Side is, they're a brokerage as a service provider. So they provide everything that an agent or an agency would need to be able to run their business. Absolutely everything. So I don't have to worry about the day-to-day things that an agent would typically have to worry about, or that I used to have to worry about when I was with a big box brokerage. They take care of everything, and they allow me then to focus on my clients and my team to focus on their clients, which is what we want to do.
So I bet that's been really helpful during this time of COVID, when it's been very different for you right?
Very different. Very different.
So you're here primarily to talk about, it's been a year plus since we've had this impact of COVID. And I'd love to hear your update. Are we getting to the other side? What is happening? How has it affected the market? So many questions. So
many questions and so much information. So first, let me start, take it back a year. March 16th, I remember that day very well, shut down. And what I thought, I had a listing on the market. Unfortunately, they had just gone into contract. Mm. And because of the shutdown and the uncertainty, they pulled out. Mm. So it was, you know, stressful for my poor sellers, obviously, and me. Mm-hmm. And so we thought the market was going to come to a screeching halt. And it did for about 2 to 3 weeks. And as a market, as an industry, we really pivoted. We became quickly essential workers because of home and shelter. So we were able to then show properties, no open houses, obviously, but mask up, glove up, sanitize the home and show properties 2 people at a time. So it was very different. But what that did was it brought out the very serious buyers. So people who were very interested, had cash ready to go for the spring market, ready to buy, they were the ones that came out. So the market actually, after that 3 week, what are we going to do period, it became very, very active again. So it was really interesting. But through the year, what happened was the buyer's criteria started to change. As they were staying home, sheltering in place, a few things happened. The first thing is the urban dwellers in condos, like in the city or San Francisco or even locally in Silicon Valley, they realized, well, I love my condo, but I don't have enough space. So those people started looking in suburban neighborhoods, backyards, larger homes, etc. The people in suburbia who were working remotely but were still sheltering in place, they felt they didn't have enough space. They started going rural. So,
and what are the things with the suburban ones that you mentioned? What caused them to feel like they didn't have enough space?
Well, I think one of the things was they realized they could work from home and that they would probably be able to work from home indefinitely. And a lot of companies were giving that signal. This is working. We're still profitable. People are productive. So they land space. I mean, mm-hmm. it became all about space. Mm. Not only how big is the house, what's the floor plan? Do we want this huge open concept or do we want designated spaces now? I have an office. My, you know, husband has an office. The kids need a study room. And we don't all want to be in the same room. Right. So things just started changing. And it was very interesting to me because buyers really reevaluated, how do I want to live? What is my lifestyle? And I always think people should look at that, but they were doing it on their own. So I thought that was very, very positive. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that changed. The other thing that happened is, if you remember the CARES Act that was presented a couple of months into COVID, the CARES Act included something that was called forbearance. And most of you probably know what that is, but just to remind you, forbearance was for homeowners and it was a contract that they had, the government had with most of the banks that held mortgages, for homeowners to be able to defer their mortgage payments for 3 months, 6 months, up to a year, and either tack that balance onto the back end or pay it, you know, when their forbearance contract is over or split it over a number of payments. So at the end of 2020, there were actually 2.8 million homes in forbearance, which is a lot.
And that is in the country?
In okay. the country, in the entire country.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. And so those were people who just weren't able to, for whatever reason, because of the economics of COVID and job loss and all those, that terrible part, could not keep their house.
Right. They were, you know, unsure about the job market. They, you know, they were people who had lost their jobs. I know a lot of blue collar, white collar, upper management, mm-hmm. senior management, people that were furloughed or mm-hmm. laid off. So it was across the board. It wasn't one demographic. It was across the board. So that was a wonderful benefit that the government gave homeowners. And what it did also was it made sure that we weren't going to have another housing crisis like we did in 2008, where there were going to be a number of foreclosures. The government intentionally prevented that from happening, and I thought that was just a marvelous thing for homeowners. So that is another thing that happened. So fast forward 12 months, here we are today, and it is just a crazy, insane market. So one of the major issues in the market right now is inventory. There is a lack of inventory, an all-time lack of inventory in most major cities and areas in the country. So, for example, here in the Bay, in California, we are down over 40% in our inventory.
And I'm just shaking my head because we were not at an incredibly high level of inventory right. before all this started.
Right. Arizona, for example. Arizona, we all think of Arizona, oh my God, they overbuilt. They built tract homes throughout Arizona. Phoenix is just a sprawling suburban. They are down in inventory 67%.
That's just amazing.
So what that's doing, it's creating a huge seller's market and a very aggressive, it's bidding wars. In cities that people want to either buy investment property or move to, such as Austin, Texas is one of the places people are moving to, people are buying homes sight unseen because they sell so quickly that they'll make an offer, a winning offer, sight unseen. What I also read was that a number of institutional investors are also buying investment properties. So the number was something like, the article I just read was something like 20% of the homes that are being purchased in Boise, Idaho, in Nashville, in Arizona, and Texas are institutional investors buying up those homes.
So what, and just for our listeners, can you describe institutional versus the clients that you primarily work with?
Yeah, so an institutional investor would be something like BlackRock that has mm-hmm. maybe a division that has a housing investment portfolio investment. They would buy, that they offer then to their clients, such as a real estate a REIT, mm-hmm.
Residential REITs or yeah. something
residential
of that
REITs.
Nature.
So they're buying up property a lot. So homeowners then, or regular people like you and like me, are having to compete with them as well. So it has just gone crazy. And one example of, a bidding war, I'll give you a personal example that just happened to me. Prices across the board in U.S., in the country, in the major areas, major cities and major areas, have gone up 15 to 16% in this past 12 months, which is a lot. So I had a client, I still have a client, that moved here from England two years ago, and rented and then realized, oh, we want to live in Mountain View. So we focused in on this one neighborhood, a house came on the market, listed at $2.3 million. In a normal, aggressive seller's market, I would advise them to write an offer 10 to 15% over asking. And I would say, this is the house you really want and you want to go for it, write 15% over list price. And when we went to write the offer, I said, it's a different market. So you can write 15% over asking, but there's going to be, 12 offers. And there may probably a cash offer somewhere in there, one or two cash offers. So maybe write, 15 to 20% over list. And it's up to you. I always give it my advice and then leave it up to the client because it's their money.
And I'm just going to pause for a second. I mean, these are huge, huge dollars.
These are big dollars.
Really a commitment, even to think about the house at the asking price, let alone you're guiding them through the process of really, this is what you're going to need to do to get this house.
Right. It's just, but I'll tell you, awesome clients. I have amazing clients. He said, 20%, I want this house. We're going to write 25% over asking. Well, that's $500,000. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money. But he said, I want to go for it. So we went for it. I thought, he has got a great offer. Well, he didn't win. The winning offer wrote 30% over asking, which is a significant amount of money. So that is what's happening. So
how did he handle that? I mean, what a shock to think, okay, I'm going to go ahead and make this big commitment. And yeah, it would be very normal, like you thought, or I would think, okay, he's got this.
Yeah, he's he like many other, you know, clients that I work with, looked at it in a very pragmatic way, which I liked. Mm-hmm. I felt very sad for them because I know she really, really wanted the house. But he said, you know what? Now I'm educated. I know what houses are really going for. I know how many people I'm going to be competing with and who I'm going to be competing with. And I'm happy that I was aggressive and I went for it and I gave it my all. So I'm okay with that. We'll go find another house.
They didn't get on a plane and head back to England.
No, they didn't get on a plane and head back to England. And, you know, and I always tell people in a competitive situation, and they always roll their eyes, like, there's no way that's true. But I always tell them, and it is true, this wasn't your home. Your home hasn't come on the market yet, and you will win your home. So that any of my clients that you talk to over the past 16 years will tell you, she told us that, and that was 100% true. So, so I have great faith.
What about this mass exodus we are hearing about people leaving California in droves? That's big headlines in the media.
Yeah, the great California exodus. So it's somewhat of a myth. There's really not a great, you know, California exodus. Most of the people that moved last year moved within California. So they are the people that moved from urban to suburban, suburban to rural. So a lot of people moved up to Sacramento. A lot of people in Silicon Valley moved to Morgan Hill, to Gilroy. So they stayed within California. However, tracking from July 2019 to July 2020, so half of the pandemic, really, 21,000 people moved into California. Which isn't a lot, but it's, you know, it's a fair amount of people. However, 139,000 more moved out of California. And the areas that they're moving to, the top few areas, towns that they're moving to, Boise, Idaho is actually the top city that they're migrating to, which is interesting. Austin, Texas, which I mentioned before, people are moving to. Houston and Dallas people are moving to, which is kind of interesting to me. They're moving to Washington. They're moving to Oregon. They're moving, you know, they're moving east and west, South Carolina. So
it's interesting because what is it all driven by? I know, you know, it's big news here in Silicon Valley that Tesla moved its headquarters to Austin, that Oracle moved its headquarters to Austin. So that's been big news here. What about these other places? Is it about more about the, you know, the space and what the dollar will buy? Or is it, you know, is it corporate?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of things. So it's, I think one thing is let's be close to family. Let's move where we came from and be close to family. One thing is, wow, we can sell our house here and buy, you know, a much larger house in one of these other cities. For example, my ex-assistant, because she's moved, she sold her house locally here and moved to Boise, Idaho, and she bought a home for a family home. And she also bought 4 investment properties. So she took her equity from her home here and bought 5 homes in Boise, Idaho. Now, the prices are increasing, you know, significantly in all these other cities like they are here, around 15%. So, you know, that's getting less and less possible. However, you know, the average price in Boise, Idaho for a house that would be $2.3 million here that my client lost last week would be about $500,000 or $600,000 there. So the price discrepancy is huge. So millennials that have moved out of this area have moved to Texas. Austin is a big millennial pool. A lot of millennials have moved to Austin. Their parents have followed them and sold their homes here and moved with them. So I have one client, I sold their home and their parents' home last year, and they bought a house sight unseen in Austin. The daughter went with the realtor and they decided, okay, we'll write an offer because it's going to be close to my daughter. It's going to be good enough. So
can you imagine doing that? That would be so challenging to purchase a home.
So insane. And you know, one of the things that people ask is, why in the world is inventory so low? If all of these people are moving, why aren't there any houses? And you really have to go back to the Great Recession in 2008. And what happened then is construction and building of new homes stopped. I mean, came to a complete standstill. No more building. And that took years to ramp back up. As the housing market came back, it didn't come back, or it came back faster than the builders were able to build homes. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't parallel. And it is still, because of COVID, the price of materials has become so expensive, and labor has become so expensive that it's still slower. It's still not keeping up pace. So you kind of have this weird, perfect storm right now of people wanting to move, not enough inventory. One reason is because of construction. Millennials, the largest chunk of millennials are turning 30 right now, which is an age that they'd want to be starting a family or at least buying their first piece of real estate. You have a lot of tech people that have either moved or moving to where these other companies moved, or here in Silicon Valley that have cash and want to buy a home. So all these things are happening at once. And then you add on to it the layer of the pandemic and COVID and sheltering in place. And what that did is having people rethink how they live, where they live. All these things happening at once have created just an insane, insane market. So I just sent out my newsletter, and what I wrote in it is, everybody's asking me, how's the market? And the answer really is, it depends. So if you are a seller and you had any interest in selling your home this year, put it on the market, sell it. If you're a buyer, just be ready. Make sure that you are educated enough, knowledgeable enough of what the market really is, and be realistic. And if you're an investor, and this is probably for another podcast, but the 1031 exchange situation that an investor can switch out, sell their investment property and buy another property and defer the capital gains, that may be going away. So if you're an investor, I would say take advantage of 1031 exchanges this year. So
there's so many things. It's so interesting in the work that both of us do. We've both been through those time periods, 2008-09 plus others prior to that. And when one's going, when one's going through it, it seems like, well, this is how it's always going to be. Whatever this thing is, this is how it's always going to be. And how things do shift and change over time. But what would you say, given that I know how stressful this process is, or I have a sense of it, what do you think are the constants in your work? I know what the constants are here, and I think they're similar, but what are your constants that you rely on in terms of serving clients during these really tumultuous times?
You know, that's a good question. I think the constants are, whether you're buying, selling, you're an investor, you need to find somebody who is going to be there with you every step of the way. And it, like the agents in my company and myself, you know, we keep up on the market, the local market, and even the market nationwide. So we can educate you. And I think that's constant. I mean, the education of a client is super important to make sure they know everything they need to know before they make a decision. I think that's really, really important. It's an emotional process. And so I think for me, you know, the cooler heads prevail. I have to keep remembering that because it's such an emotional process for everybody, you know, the buyers and the sellers, that, and sometimes the other agent doesn't subscribe to cooler heads prevail. So sometimes it's three emotional three people parties. I'm dealing with. But I think staying calm and through the face of the and through the entire process is really, really important. Is just staying calm, holding my client's hand through the process is very important.
I can imagine, you know, as we were talking about transitional work here, it can be such a pull for the buyer seller or even the other realtor to be like, I just want this done. I'm sick of thinking about it. I just want it done and have a house. And that's where you're talking about that cooler head prevail, like holding the vision of really where they want to be.
Yes, because another fun fact that I just read about, I'm getting information like, you know, daily on, mm-hmm. on that market. But another thing I just read, another article is, to your point, Esther, is 1 out of 6 transactions, the buyer backs out.
My goodness.
This past 12 months. And that is because of buyer fatigue. It's kind of like COVID fatigue. Mm-hmm. I'm just tired of writing so many offers. I just want a house. Mm-hmm. Then they go into contract and it's like, well, this really isn't the house I wanted. Mm-hmm. So they back out. So that's, you know, and again, mm-hmm. and they haven't gotten good coaching, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If somebody backs out of a contract, they haven't gotten good guidance or, you know.
Have their expectations set, right? Yeah. And the last thing I want to touch on is this area. You just started talking about it in terms of the millennials. What we're familiar with hearing is, oh, millennials don't want to settle down. They want to rent. They want to lease their cars, or they don't want a car. They just want to use Uber, et cetera. And what I'm understanding from what you're saying is millennials are settling down and the parents are coming along with them. And I think one of the reasons also, or we've talked about this, why there isn't more inventory here is because we've got those families where people bought their homes here in the 70s. And if they go to sell them, there's a huge amount of money that goes to capital gains income. So how I've got the situation working with clients of mine where they, through the COVID, they've been taking care of the grandkids, their very close family unit, but their adult children are saying, I want out of my townhouse. I want a bigger house. And in order for that to be accomplished, do we all move together? How do we do that? And it's a huge consideration. How have you addressed this?
Well, that has become a trend, multi-generational housing. Which I, you know, is a good thing. You know, they combine their either their equity and, you know, stock and buy a home. The kids are buying the home to accommodate the parents, or the parents are buying a home to accommodate their adult kids and their families, either with land and a couple of homes on the land, or with a lot large enough to build an ADU or a studio apartment for their mom that may be moving in with them. So there's been an upward trend of multi-generational purchasing. And I, you know, that's one solution because millennials do want to buy. And that's why a lot of millennials are moving to other parts of the country and moving out of Silicon Valley. Their parents who bought their home in the 60s or the 70s or even the 50s, who are nervous and have a fear of, oh my gosh, I'm going to sell my home and I'm going to have all this equity, but where in the heck am I going to go? We have a program where we help people buy first and then we put their home on the market and fix it up and sell it for them. So we've got that option. The other thing that has changed is during the past election, California passed Proposition 19. And what Proposition 19 does is it allows the homeowner to sell their home and transfer their existing tax base. So let's say you did buy your home in 1970 and your taxes are, you know, $1,500 a year. But if you bought a home for $3 million, they're going to be, you know, $35,000 a year. You can transfer your tax base. In the previous proposition that this replaced, you had to buy down. So if you sold your home for $2 million, you had to buy $2 million or under. With this new proposition, you can buy a higher value home, and you can do it 3 times. So it's really I think things that the government is putting in place are trying to help a homeowner's understanding the dilemma that they're in, having so much equity and capital gains isn't going away. So that's another topic, but there are solutions.
And it's important to have somebody on your side who understands the changes in the laws and what's happening and what the options are. We all get used to, I still have clients saying, well, can't I, when I sell my house, move my basis into another house? And that's not been in place since like the, you know, 80s. So we all get used to where we were at the time, and it's important to stay current. So Patrice, it's been great talking with you. I always feel like we could talk so much longer, but we do have to close for today. And I think as the listeners have heard, you've heard a woman who has those core principles of empathy, who builds trust because of her knowledge, her education, of staying current and her experience, who's compassionate for those who don't get what they want right away, but has the vision to say, you know, we'll keep at this until you get your right house. And her clients are very loyal to her, and she has a lot of integrity, and they are she is loyal to them as well. If those who want to reach you, I know you mentioned a newsletter. How do they get in touch with you?
A couple of ways. So one way is just give me a call. Happy to talk to anybody and answer any question. And I can be reached at 650-520-7675. Email me at patrice@illuminateproperties.com. And you can always visit our website, illuminateproperties.com.
Thank you so much, Patrice. It's been great to talk with you.
It's been great talking to you, too. So thank you for having me.
Great job, you guys. I mean, fantastic information. Again, Patrice, thank you so much for being on the show. And Esther, thank you for bringing her on the show. And our last thank you, of course, goes to you, listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.